hard-hitting, intelligent discussion, painstakingly researched, thought-provoking opinions, and deep insight when you need it most. You'll get none of that here. Broadcasting from a secret location deep within America's heartland, Unapologetically Mediocre Studios presents the No Better Than Average podcast with your hosts, Jacob Cazell and Jeff Janey.
So, how was your Christmas, sir?
You know, it was fine. It was, just your average, everyday Christmas. Got to spend time with family, and that's always a good thing. I'm glad to have a little bit of time off. And, you know, we've had nonstop family fun since, Christmas Eve. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to going back to work a little bit.
I understand. Got to get back to work so you can rest.
That's right. That's right. Although, it's not just been all lackadaisical laying around. In preparation of ripping up the yard for the sewer yesterday and the day before, I spent, Friday, five and a half hours chainsawing down trees. My father came over and brought this new chainsaw that he got, and we cut up trees, and we took down two huge trees that needed to come down that apparently they planted, right over the sewer line to mark, hey, that's where the sewer line goes. And spent, all day doing that. And it just really tells me sitting and working at a desk is not, it's not the best thing in the world for going and moving heavy logs for 5 hours. It was pretty pathetic around here last night. And then today he came back over. We had to load up all of the brush and get that onto a trailer. He's got a friend who burns brush. He's got a big, he's got a big pole barn that he heats with wood and uses all of the brush for that. So yeah, the level of physical activity the last 2 days has been way above my normal baseline sitting at a desk and drinking coffee that I'm normally used to. So I'm ready to get back to that just to rest a little bit.
Yeah, that sounds good to me too. Thankfully I have done not much of anything, which, I'm not going to complain about.
Yeah, no. I'm looking forward to tomorrow and hopefully getting to do some of that nothing tomorrow. But yeah, we'll see. I'm sure that there's always going to be something that comes up.
Yeah, there usually is, right?
There is. And so actually we have a new thing that I wanted to roll out right before.
Breaking news.
I don't know if it's breaking news. It's technically it's not even news. It's a new way for all of our fans to get in touch with us. So fans, I just want to put this up at the top of the podcast to maybe catch some of you while you're still paying attention instead of at the other end where 98% have tuned out, which is fine. I'm usually just barely paying attention to Jeff by then anyway myself. But hey, if you have a question for us or you have a comment or you just want to say hateful, spiteful things and have us put you on air saying those things, we have got a thing for you. You can call with your cellular telephones. 317-643-1212. That doesn't spell anything fancy, and we don't have an 800 number, so you're just going to have to pay the nickel. But call 317-643-1212 and leave us a question, a comment, a rant, and we will listen to your message and address it on an upcoming show.
And let me be clear with one thing that Jacob said. He said, call us on your cellular phones. And he was absolutely correct. If you call from a landline, we will not answer your question.
I technically don't know that we would be able to tell the difference. But, my grandparents might be the only people that would be calling on a landline. And they've been dead for 20 years. So, yeah.
If they call, we will put them on the air.
If they call, we're going to be reaching a whole different audience, I think. More of the Art Bell Ancient Alien audience.
I like Art Bell.
Oh, yeah, he's great. I go in fits and spurts, and, God bless the internet. You can go and listen to all of those old shows, and, man, there are just some crackpots out there that just you can tell they genuinely believe the things that they are saying. And I try
to turn off Father Balasair or whatever his name is. Father.
Oh, yeah. Father Malachi.
Malachi. Yeah. Try to turn it off when he's on. I think not.
Okay. Malachi is really, really interesting. And, I want to think that Art Bell is doing it with a wink and a nod. I really hope that he is you know, just having a laugh on the inside along with everyone listening. But I don't know if he is or not. But man, his people are kind of, wow, kind of a little crackpotty in a good way.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, so what do we have to talk about today, Jeff?
Well, I think we have a few things to talk about. I know one of the ones that I'm kind of interested in, because it's a little bit of you eating some crow.
Oh, no.
What was that? You say that you're going to grudgingly acknowledge that a smartwatch may, in fact, be a useful thing. What? Cats and dogs living together? What is this?
I am, and yes, I will. Here's the thing. I'm grudgingly acknowledging it may be useful. I believe that is far from the tacit thumbs up, hey, everybody go get a smartwatch.
That Apple Watch rolls around, dude, you are hooked.
I don't know. I'm willing to soften my it's useless opinion. And the idea that the battery life is still going to be really severely restricted, it makes me sad. But a week or so ago, I had the chance to fondle the Moto 360. And man, it was really surprisingly kind of awesome. You know, the things that I really thought I wouldn't care for didn't seem to bother me at all. You know, once I had seen all of the stuff back a few months ago where people were showing that there's a little spot at the bottom of the watch face where the display drivers are. And so you get sort of the flat tire. So it's not a perfect circle. You know, I that's just all I could see in pictures was that, and just thought, oh, this is going to be terrible. But you know what? You see it when you first pick it up, but after 5 seconds, you don't even know it's there. You know, it's surprisingly crisp. The watch faces look really nice on it. The notifications were really slick. Google has done a lot to think out the interface. I still don't like the idea of having another thing that I have to put on the charger every day. But I'm a little bit more optimistic that maybe smartwatches aren't going to be such a huge steaming pile.
Yeah, you know, I've never thought that they were. You know, I've always thought that there's a use case for those. I still haven't purchased one. I want to wait and see what the Apple Watch brings us. Out of the ones that I've seen, I really do like the Moto 360. I like the new Zen Watch, I believe.
Yes. Is that LG?
Asus,
yes.
That kind of appeals to me. I think that's kind of cool. But you know, I've just played with those, you know, just a little bit, and I'm not quite to the point where I'm, you know, thinking that that's 100% up my alley. But I kind of feel like I've been holding off buying. I had one of the recalled Fitbits, and I did enjoy that, but I sent it back in and got my money back, et cetera, et cetera. And I've been kind of holding off since then, and I really feel like that a smartwatch is probably going to be in my future, because I don't see spending $125 on a fitness thing when I could spend $250-$300 and get a nice watch.
Yeah. Well, and Apple has said that the entry point for the Apple Watch is going to be $349. So, I mean, you sort of know what your bottom line, you know, in is. And I think that some of the Google Watch or the Google Wear alternatives are a little bit below that price point, but, you know, you're still in the $200 range to come in. I think the thing that bugs me is that there's good things with being dedicated to an ecosystem, but there are some serious downsides too. And I understand Apple wants you to be all in Apple's ecosystem, and Google wants you to be all in Google's ecosystem. But darn it, I want to be able to choose what's best for me. And that may be an iOS phone, and it may be an Android Wear watch. And you know, it does frustrate me a little bit, because Google has, to this point, done such a good job supporting their applications on the iOS platform. You know, it may not be as integrated as tightly as you get on an Android device, but it's pretty darn integrated, and they work really well, and you know, but not Android Wear. You can't make them coexist, and you know, there's no way on God's green earth that the Apple Watch is going to play with anything other than, you know, the latest edition of the iPhone, maybe one edition back. And you know, you've got the Pebble out there, and I've seen the Pebbles. I've not really done much extensively hands-on, and it looks nice, and I like some of the things that it's doing with, you know, using e-ink and the longer battery life, but it seems limited compared to what the promise of some of the, you know, specific like Android Wear offerings or the Apple Watch demos that I've seen are. So I don't know. I feel a little bit hamstrung that I really want to abstract myself and become agnostic, but it's, you know, the ecosystem lock-ins really make that almost impossible.
Yeah. I mean, it would be nice if we could see one of these manufacturers kind of break the, we're only going to be supportive of our ecosystem. I mean, I think Pebble does to a certain extent.
Sure.
But they're, you know, I kind of feel like they're waning a little bit on the technology front. I mean, they really haven't come out with anything new for a while. I know Apple's never going to do it, but by God, it would be so awesome if they would come out and say, this is not iPhone specific, that this will work with anything. I don't think that'll happen.
Yeah, there's no incentive for them to. I mean, you know, they want their vertical integration to be all Apple from top to bottom. And, you know, admittedly, there is deep hooks into the operating system from both ends of the spectrum, from what Apple is doing and what Google is doing, that, you know, they have to bake that secret sauce in pretty deeply. And I understand why neither side is willing to give open access to all to those APIs and to that deep level of system access. Unfortunately, that means that, you know, if you're in the iOS camp, you're waiting until spring to do something. And if you don't love what Apple has, then you're sunk. And the other side is with, you do have more of a choice from a, maybe a stylistic standpoint with Android Wear, but the actual Android Wear itself is locked down and controlled by Google. So if you're in that Android Wear platform, as opposed to Samsung's Tizen platform, then, you know, you are only going to see, you know, what Google provides you. And then it really becomes stylistic choices of what, you know, what LG brings to the table, what Samsung brings to the table, what Asus brings to the table. And, you know, it's a little bit more of a choice. Maybe it seems like Apple has done a really good job, at least from the initial launch, of trying to satisfy that, that style piece. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like you really are being forced to make some tough choices depending on which direction you want to go with the technology.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, from what I've seen, Apple is just leaps and bounds above anyone else in the stylistic department. I mean, their watch is just gorgeous. And the way that the band is interchangeable fairly quickly, it's, well, you know, it's pretty amazing. And
yeah.
I just think that, you know, to me, that's where Apple has always been, head and shoulders above Android. And I love Android. I had it for a long time. From a pure operating system standpoint, and how you can customize, deal with applications, deal between applications, I think Android is superior to iOS. The but to that is the ease of use, and most importantly, the build quality, the hardware design, the fit and finish. There's just no comparison to what Apple puts out there, and it hurts me to say that. But I mean, I've had them all. You know that. I mean, I've had Samsung phones, I've had Motorola phones, I've had HTC One, which, you know, was considered the best Android fit and finish, and it's just not the same. It just really isn't.
No, and you know, it's interesting that you say, you know, Apple from a design standpoint, and I would agree with you, but that is my opinion, and I happen to like the design aesthetic that so far Cupertino has been putting out. You know, to be honest, I sort of like the style choices from the iPhone 5 and 4 platform better than I think I do the iPhone 6. But, you know, there's a lot of people who hated the squared, you know, sharp-edged 4, 4S, 5, 5S, and, you know, sing high praise for the roundedness of the 6. And I get that that's a, you know, that's a beauty of the beholder kind of thing. But that being said, I've seen quite a few people knocking the design of the Apple Watch. And while I think it's nice, I have to say I'm not so blown away by it compared to what I'm seeing out there from Asus, from HP or LG, from Motorola. It is very nice, and I'm sure that the Apple Watch Edition is going to just be stunning. And, you know, the bracelet system that they've come up with is really slick. But I don't know that you can say Apple owns it from a design standpoint. Now, with that being said, I'm sure fit and finish is going to be impeccable. That's certainly something that they're known for. But I think that's an eye of the beholder kind of thing. And I think that you'll find maybe not as many people who, you know, say that the design is not as good. But I think that you'll still see pretty serious detractors who are still firmly, you know, have both feet in the Apple camp. I don't know. That's such a tough one to hit, which is, you know, part of the reason that this is such an odd market, because watches are so style driven and fashion driven that, you know, to have one basic chassis, which everything is built off of, that's tough. But, you know, at the same time, they can't have 100 SKUs that are all different from each other. So I think it's a real juggling act and a tightrope walk to balance, you know, interchangeable bracelets to give it a different look and different materials to give it a different look versus actually coming up with 30 different, you know, chassis and 100 different bands. I don't know. I think functionality is going to drive sales, and I'm willing to admit now that it's going to be a bigger market than I was initially thinking, but how big it ends up being, I just don't know. It'll be interesting to see what the early adopters say, because that's going to be key for everything.
Sure. Did you get that link I sent you?
I did. And so what Jeff sent me, he sent a link to a wireless charging stand from Dodo Case. And if you want to check it out, you can go find it at uncrate.com and just search for the Dodo Case Apple Watch charging stand. And it's a nice little, it looks like it's wood and leather affair that it contains the magnetic inductive charger. And it's nice. It's definitely something that would be of an Apple type product. But again, darn it, I don't want to take my watch off every night and have to charge it.
Yeah, I understand.
I mean, I'm blind as a bat, and I like having my watch on because at night when I'm asleep with my glasses off, I don't have the luxury of being able to look at the nightstand clock because I can't read it. So I've got to have my watch just right there, and it would be odd to go to bed without a watch on. I know some people can't stomach the idea of sleeping with a watch on, but I'm just the opposite.
Yeah, I'm a no watch guy at night, but I can see from my bed to my clock. So
yeah, see, I don't take it off to shower. I don't take it off to sleep. I like it on my wrist. The only time I take my watch off, interestingly, is if I'm wearing a watch with a metal bracelet and I'm typing on a laptop. I hate the feel of a bracelet banging against the laptop. And I know it's bad form to not have your wrists elevated, but fooey on all that, I rest my wrist on the laptop, and then it just, oh, it's like nails on a chalkboard, that metal on metal sound.
Oh, fooey, I say.
That's yeah. Funny. So, you know, segueing a little bit and talking about Apple so much, it turns out that this last year was a banner year for Apple. They have bought back $56 billion in their own stock. According to MarketWatch, Apple apparently thinks that the best use of its giant cash hoard is to invest in itself. And that is being heavily driven by Carl Icahn. I don't know how much you've followed any of his, dalliances with Apple stock, especially since Steve has been gone, but he has been heavily invested in, you know, meeting with Tim Cook and trying to get Apple to buy more of itself back and to pay dividends, which they've never traditionally done. Sure. And so
I think that Carl's trying to make himself more wealthy, which, you know, I guess I can't blame the dude. I mean, that's good on him. I mean, when you own a lot of the stock and you ask for someone to buy it back, then your stock inevitably is going to go up. But, yeah. You know, I mean, is that going to hurt Apple in the long run? I don't think so. I think taking that ownership and with the cash reserves that they have on hand, it's probably reasonable to assume that they, you know, would buy back some of it.
Sure. I don't think that, I mean, companies are continually buying themselves if they think that performance is going to continue and that they're an undervalued stock. It's just, it's amazing that, you know, they're buying so much back. It's three times as much as IBM repurchased in their own stock in the same time period. And they said the article I read said that when you adjust for the 7-4-1 stock split earlier this year, Apple has had a 43% growth over the last 12 months. So, I mean, if you could get 40% on your money, that's a strong investment. I mean, that's turning $56 billion into $90 billion in a year, which is already on top of their, you know, something like $150 billion in liquid assets. Apparently, Icon is poo-pooing the $56 billion buyback, saying it's not enough and that they should have spent $100 billion to repurchase shares.
That's a lot of their cash, though, isn't it?
It's 64% of their cash and cash equivalents, which, you know, I can't even fathom.
You got to have some rainy day money, right?
Well, when you start talking about numbers like that, you go, wow, you know, Apple's never been known for buying companies for, you know, billions and billions of dollars. You've never seen, you know, Apple pull a Facebook like they did with WhatsApp and pay, $20 billion in stock and cash. And I mean, but it makes the $3 billion or $3.5 billion Beats acquisition look like, you know, nothing. That's just, you know, almost just loose change when you're talking $150 billion in liquid assets. You know, the interesting thing, I was doing a little bit of reading about Carl Icahn. He's almost 80. He's 78. He's worth almost $25 billion. You know, how much is enough? Like, I get that he probably at this point, clearly, it's not necessarily about the money. It's probably about the deal. But, you know, man, at what point do you just, you know, sit back and have a beer and say, you know, I did a good job with my life?
I think that depends on your political affiliation.
Possibly.
Republican answer is there's never enough. It's not about how much. It's that's how you score the game.
And right.
To win, right, you got to have more.
Well, and we've had this conversation before. You know, those people, you know, the Bill Gateses of the world are clearly not doing this for the money. They're, you know, they're doing it because that's their passion and their drive. And the fact that I don't have that kind of passion is why I'm not worth $68 billion or $6.8 billion or even $68. but, you know, it is interesting. It's just, you wonder at what point do you become, you know, philanthropy seems like an interesting, you know, goal when you achieve a certain amount. And, you know, gosh, why can't some of these crazy billionaire people, you know, decide to go that route and help humanity as opposed to, you know, trying to increase their worth because that's how they score the game. I don't know. That's, I guess, maybe my socialistic liberal side coming out a little bit, but I don't know. At $25 billion seems like you've won.
Yeah, I think that pretty much you should probably consider, especially at what, 78?
Yeah, 78.
Maybe, you know, take a vacation.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't even fathom it. I
kind of enjoy Disney World. I can recommend that.
Yeah, he could go like all the time.
He could, you know, go by himself, literally.
He could go by Disney. Well, yeah. Maybe not. He could probably buy a seat at the table, though.
Yeah.
With $25 billion.
Yeah. I think he could for sure.
Something else I saw that was interesting, I guess, talking about how much is enough and the liberal side of me coming out. Connecticut has just announced that 46 of its towns are going to be building local and municipal gigabit fiber networks.
This is genius. This is what I've been saying all along. We need, you know, part of me, you know, cringes at saying things like this, but we need the government to step in and get cheap, fast internet to the people.
Agreed. And you know what? You might have to move out east. It's though, interesting. Really? They're not doing it solely as a government entity, though. It's a public-private partnership, and I like it. The stated goal is, quote, to make internet service in Connecticut better for everyone through a local-level public project that would bring gigabit fiber to the state's residents and businesses. That is a government that gets it. You know, the internet, it is such a equalizing power that, man, it's not just like gas or water. I'm going to say at this point, the internet is more empowering than any other utility as far as giving everyone a equal opportunity to gain a voice, to participate, to, I mean, you know, you can do anything. You can learn anything. It's such a powerful tool. And I agree. I think that should be under maybe not at the federal level. I think that things get messy when you start saying everyone is equal, but at the state level or at the local government level, absolutely.
Well, you know, somebody needs to step up and break up this whole, we only have one choice. And if we are only going to have one choice, one legitimate choice in our area, shouldn't that be local government at the very least, instead of some mega corporation that's making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on us?
Well, surprisingly, Connecticut is one of only 20 states without incumbent phone company and cable company sponsored laws against municipal networks on the books. So there's just not that many places right this minute that it could even happen without, you know, the people getting involved and saying, damn it, we're not going to stand for this anymore, and getting the laws changed. And, you know, most people aren't educated enough to care. And I don't see it happening. And it scares me to think that it's going to go the other way, and that, you know, in 5 years, it's going to be 10 states without laws against municipal networks and
sure.
instead of 30.
Yeah, you know, it's frustrating to me. I mean, I just hate the fact that there are a lot of people who don't have, you know, access to what the internet could bring them. And you know, my soapbox has always been, let's quit killing people and let's give people the tools. I'd rather spend the money that way. And it's just it's one of my little pet projects. I mean, I would love to see every single person have a Chromebook, every single person have internet access. And I think that's a worthwhile thing in our life. And, you know, giving people the ability, even if they waste it on things like Facebook, you know, giving the people the ability to get on there and talk to people and see new things, experience new ideas, you know, maybe learn a thing or two every once in a while.
Yep.
I think that's a noble and worthwhile goal.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned, you know, give everybody a Chromebook and internet access. In our last show, we talked about the Microsoft HP partnership with the stream. And I just saw just today, actually, a commercial advertising the stream for $199. So they're promoting it aggressively.
Absolutely. The only thing that worries me about it is one of the things I like and about the Chrome and that I can recommend it to some people is you just don't really have to worry about things like viruses.
No,
I mean, it's just not going to break. And you give somebody a Windows machine and man, it just seems like they can break that thing so easy.
Yeah. But, even when they're not trying to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you go to one website and you click on something that looks totally harmless and boom, you're gone.
Yeah, I got a text from my sister Christmas Eve, and it just said help! ! And her husband had uninstalled I don't know, McAfee or one of those, you know, subscription based antivirus systems, and it had lapsed, and they never did anything, and it was constantly nagging them to renew, and he finally just got sick of seeing the pop ups and deleted it. Thinking, you know, it'll go away. It won't be a problem. I'm not a complete idiot. I won't click on anything and do anything stupid. And then all of a sudden was getting pop-ups and couldn't, you know, couldn't do anything. And she said, look, it's Christmas Eve. I'm not saying, can you help us today? But, you know, we're going to get together tomorrow. Can we bring the laptop? Can you please take a look at it. It's unusable. And so I said, sure, bring it over. And I looked at it when we were together for Christmas dinner. And somehow, I don't know how, he's not sure, he managed to install something that installed five or six other things. And every time you went to a website, it popped up, you know, garbage and crap. And it was just a pain in the neck. And, you know, fortunately, you know, touch wood, it was a handful of things that weren't so nefarious that they left uninstallers of themselves once you went in and uninstalled them. And I was able to get it cleaned up for him. But I mean, he was literally ready to throw that computer against the wall and go buy a new one. And, you know, the average person who, you know, just isn't in technology as deeply as, you know, maybe us, we are, and our listeners are, it's not something that's just that simple when you get your computer fouled up. So I agree.
That's
completely
one of the things I love about the Chromebook, is just the ability to not have to worry about it.
Agreed. Yeah. Okay. So it's something else that's interesting, and this doesn't affect me, but it affects probably a lot of people, and it pisses me off. So
kind of pisses me off too.
Assassin's Creed season pass customers are being denied their right to sue Ubisoft, or Ubisoft. I'm not really sure how you pronounce it. But basically, I'm going to say Ubisoft because that seems the least silly. They launched Assassin's Creed, and apparently it was a major, the Assassin's Creed Unity was a huge debacle, all kinds of problems. So they promised that season pass holders, which apparently is a thing that you can do, you can pay to get access to all downloadable content, which seems a little crazy to me anyway.
Okay, let me jump in there because, you know, you're not a console user, but what Season Pass allows you to do, it's become very common for games to have downloadable side missions, extra downloadable, you know, story. And when you buy a season pass, basically what happens is, and I have not, let me preface this, I have not bought an Assassin's Creed season pass. I did buy a Borderlands 2 season pass. And what that allows is for an entire year, any downloadable content that becomes available, you can download. Now you can do, you know, onesies and twosies, but it saves you money to do the season pass. And if it's a game that you know you really love, yeah, it's not a bad thing to do, because instead of doing that, you know, onesie, twosie, you know, 10 bucks for this one and 10 bucks for that one, you pay 30 bucks up front and everything that comes out for the year you get.
Okay, first of all, having bought console games for various people for Christmas, I say fooey to that. These things are $50 or $60, and damn it, give me all of the content. That is an absurd amount of money.
So that's, it's not, it's
that's
not
just my soapbox. I get it, but man, that is a lot of money for,
if it were little namsy pamsy things, I totally agree with you. But a lot of these are huge downloadable contents that bring a whole extra storyline, that are, you know, hours of extra gameplay. And that is not free. I don't have a problem with, you know, if you're talking about one or two little things, and yeah, okay, I get it. That's just being kind of, you know, dicks. But we're really talking about, at least in Borderlands 2, which is what I've done, I mean, you're talking about, with the four downloadable content packs that I got for my season pass, it probably tripled the amount of gameplay.
All right, well, that's a whole separate conversation we can argue about differently. But my point is, those people who did sign up for Season Pass and got their free downloadable content, it turns out that they had to accept a terms of service that included a clause that said that they couldn't sue Ubisoft for anything. And it's not just a binding arbitration clause. They put in language that prevents people from joining class actions against the company. It actually says it prevents you, your heirs, your next of kin from filing any sorts of claims, demands, charges, lawsuits, debts, defenses, actions or causes of action, obligations, damages, loss of service, compensation, pain and suffering, attorney's fees. You can't do nothing. And the fact that it is possible to accept a EULA and waive that level of rights is bad enough.
Do you think it would hold in court?
Do you think anybody has the pockets to test it?
Well, yeah, that I guess
over a video game.
Yeah, and I would argue, you know, that's all lawyer crap anyway. I mean, pain and suffering over a video game, get a life. But, you know,
agreed, but the fact is you're still signing away like every right you have for, you know, recourse through what we have 200 years of tradition of your right for recourse within the courts. And no, you can't do that. You can't join a class action. You can't do anything.
Well, good luck with Ubisoft, because any chance that I would have bought a season pass or any downloadable content for that game, which I did get for Christmas, yeah, that would be no chance.
Well, okay, you know, you say that, but how many people know about that? Not only does the public have, I mean, the public has short memories for things that are really high level, you know, big deal stuff. I mean, net neutrality is a good example. That was hot 2 months ago, and now you don't hear anybody talking about net neutrality anywhere. That is just gone. And that's something that directly affects us all, and nobody cares, and it's fallen out of favor. Nobody is going to give 2 seconds of airtime or, you know, 2 inches of ink, which that's probably even dating myself to say 2 inches of ink, because I don't think anything is even published anymore. But this is going to fly below the radar. Nobody is going to notice it. Other studios are going to go, hey, they got away with it. Why aren't we putting that in our terms of service? And then next thing you know, by this time next year, it is going to be de facto in all of your terms of service. And like you said, is it enforceable? You know, I wouldn't have said that binding arbitration should be enforceable, but the courts have unanimously and overwhelmingly ruled that, yes, binding arbitration is enforceable. So, you know,
binding arbitration has a third party in there looking out for what's right.
Well, a third party paid for by the first party.
Yeah, but in theory,
it's still a huge scam if you're the little guy and AT&T has the language that says AT&T hires the arbitrator. I mean, are they going to hire arbitrators that consistently don't side with the people who are paying them? That's biting the hand.
Well,
there's all kinds of problems with binding arbitration, but it's a smidge better than just waiving all rights for any recourse whatsoever. And the fact that, you know, I mean, I know that this is not new. We have not been reading terms of service and ELUAs and, you know, contracts forever. But, you know, this is just blatant. This is horrible.
Yeah, I wish more people understood and knew about it. But, you're right. No one is going to know or care, really.
No. And this takes me into my next rant about the video game people.
Oh, boy.
And that
here
is
we go.
Electronic Arts. They are now on my Ellen list.
If it's in the game.
Do what?
If it's in the game. That's EA's slogan.
Oh, it is? I don't pay attention, but they have pissed me off, Jeff. I'm turning my salty language on, so if you've got young kids listening the next couple of minutes, you might want to
earmuffs
them. EA is on my Ellen list. So a few shows ago, I was talking about Tetris Blitz. I was playing it. I was enjoying it. It was a little fun thing where you get to play Tetris for 2 minutes, and it kind of helps you make decisions on where to drop the blocks and, you know, tons of fun, constantly nagging for you to unlock and to pay for power-ups and to pay for coins. But, you know, I'm willing to kind of live with that freemium. I get it. Just let me have my 2 minutes of fun. I would happily spend $4 to just have an unlocked Tetris Blitz. But now they've decided that they're going to go freemium because some schmuck out there is going to pay $2.99 over and over and over again. All right, I don't like it, but I'll deal with it. So a couple of days ago, I was playing my two minute ad-free game. And halfway through, it froze the screen and paused and showed me a full screen ad right in the middle of the gameplay. Fuck you, EA. Fuck you, cock-sucking fucker.
Okay. there goes the clean rating, ladies and gentlemen. Wow.
But they can't stop with the begging for 2 minutes to show me an ad. And see, here's the thing. Here's how they suck you in. It doesn't happen right away. It only happens once you get to, like, level 20. So you've been playing for a while, and, you know, like my girlfriend, I went to her and I was like, oh my God. And she's like, yeah,
you're invested.
It's been doing that. I just put up with it. And I'm like, oh my God. I didn't even finish the game. I was immediately deleted. I have now a personal boycott of EA games and products. It is beyond the pale for me. And I saw something that I was looking for this. Like, is anybody else as infuriated as I about this?
And it's the internet. Of course there are the people.
Well, yes, but I mean legitimately infuriated. And I saw something from Touch Arcade about the egregiousness of this. They actually noticed not only are they pausing in the middle of it, but here's the thing. They've got a new update that one of the things that you do in the game is you spin a wheel to win a prize. And you can win some coins or you can win a power up. And that's one of the things that they do to kind of get you to get sucked along a little bit more to keep playing the game. And now it turns out one of the updates is you can win a Toyota icon. And when that power up gets activated, a banner at the top of the screen appears that says the all new Corolla, and a line of bricks appears in the middle, and a little tiny Toyota Corolla comes across the screen, complete with, you know, vroom vroom noises, and then drives off. Now, here's the thing: you can pay to get extra spins. And if you pay, you can still win the Corolla. So you can actually effectively end up paying money to see an ad. F*** you in the ear, sideways, up the ass on Tuesday, EA. Oh my God. Jeff is lost in fits of giggles, everybody. This show is just off the rails. But
Jacob, it's a game. Deep
no,
breaths.
No,
deep breaths. Deep breaths. Come on.
It is a game, but here's the thing. EA gets away with this. And, you know, King and Candy Crush, you know, they have got the whole freemium thing down to a science. So my fear is that, you know, EA and King and Zynga and Supercell and all of these people are going to completely screw things up for mobile gaming, because everybody's going to look at it and go, where's the value in getting a couple of bucks from someone for a good game when I can make a kind of good game and constantly nag them and, you know, just get micropayments. And yes, the vast majority of people don't pay. I understand that. And I also understand that there are those people like Leo Laporte who has admitted to spending hundreds of dollars for Candy Crush. So there are people out there. But, you know, is that going to bleed over to console games? Is that going to bleed over to PC games? You know, where's the end of that?
Is it going to bleed over to the hospital? The scalpel brought to you by Toyota.
Well, I kind of feel like it already is. You need a scalpel. That's going to be $50. You need a Tylenol. That's $8. But that's a whole separate. We could talk about healthcare. That's a whole separate one. But my point is, you know, does that completely start screwing things up for going forward? Are we ever going to be able to just pay $4 for a decent mobile game again? Feel like that's all going away.
I think that you're right. It is going away because $4 isn't enough. I mean, I think that for a quality game that you're going to spend hours on, you should be willing to pay more than $4.
Okay, so a game that I willingly paid $2.99 for, I think, is an iOS game. It might be available for Android by now, but it's called Threes. And it's just a fun little game that couldn't have cost squat to make, and I do play quite often because it's a great little game that you can pick up and play for a couple of minutes when you're in a waiting room or just, you know, have a few minutes to kill. And, you know, where is the incentive for companies like that to keep making those kind of games when they could take something like a Tetris, which, again, I would pay $5 for, you know, this Tetris Blitz happily, but I can't. It's not an option.
Yeah, I, you know, It will be interesting to see where it goes. I think you're going to see, you know, good quality premium games costing $10, not having any ads. I mean, I don't know. There's rumors that we're going to see Pokemon on iOS, but that may be $20.
I don't know. See, I'm not the right market for that because I am such a casual gamer. I mean, I don't have a console. I don't play PC games. at least not at any level to speak of. I have the occasional, you know, mobile game that I play, and it is, you know, it is very casual. I admit I am not the right demographic for that, but I feel like the casual gamer is going to get completely left behind. Because here's the thing. I might check out a Pokemon game if everybody is saying, hey, this is great. If it's $5.99 or $6.99, maybe $7.99, but I'm not in it $19. And there's a lot of people that aren't, that the casual gamers aren't going to be willing to spend that. And I get it. You know, 99 cents isn't necessarily a viable price, but there's got to be some happy medium between, you know, $10 or $12 and, you know, $20. I don't know. I do know EA. I'm done with EA. They're off my list, and hopefully, you know, more people wake up and realize that, you know, the Kings and the EAs and the Zyngas aren't doing them any favors and do the same. I don't really hold any illusions that they will, but man, I sure would like it if they did.
You know, you can buy normal Tetris from EA for $6.
Yeah, but now they're on my boycott list. I can't buy it from them.
Yeah, but that was your other option. I mean, you picked the one that was free because it was free. They do it for a reason. I mean, I agree with you that what they're doing is kind of crap, but man, there is a reason that people do that. There's a reason that Facebook is so extremely popular, because it gives you this stuff to do that's quote unquote free, but it's not really.
Oh, I understand. And I get it, but man, it's easy to see how someone could unwittingly spend more for a game like that than they would for a top tier console game.
Well, it's the whole casino mentality of, well, let's not let them bet with real money. Let's let them bet with chips, and they won't realize. I mean, it's the same idea that they're trying to get you hooked in and thinking, well, I'm only spending $3, you know, and that's going to last me for a while. What's $3? And then, oh, it's just $3 more. And oh, you know, and eventually, you know, you spent $500 on something and you're like, where did it go? I mean, it's common. I mean, this is not something new. It's new to mobile gaming, but it's not new.
I suppose, but isn't that just horribly exploitive? I mean, is there, can you, as a company, can you completely just say, well, we're not holding a gun to anybody's head. We're just providing the entertainment, and what they do with it is up to them.
Yeah, but companies don't and shouldn't have morals, right? If you believe in capitalism, they're there to make their profit the highest that it can be, period. Sorry. I mean, you know, you can argue whether or not that's the right mentality, but that's the world that America's founded on. That, you know, it's just like we've talked about in other times where, you know, Apple's hiding their money in Ireland so they don't have to pay taxes. Well, they're only doing that because they have to. The demands of stockholders is to maximize profit. And if they don't do that, they can be held liable.
You know, you say that's what America's founded on, but it's not. And unfortunately, I'm not prepared to go off in this direction, and I don't have any notes to the effect, but I have read articles that talk about the fact that our unbridled capitalism and, you know, a corporation has no morals and no obligation to do anything other than maximize value. While that is true today, companies do have an obligation to their shareholders to maximize value. That is a relatively new concept in the corporate world. When you look back 100 years ago, 150 years ago, you know, corporations did still have, there were thoughts of morality and goodwill that corporations had. It wasn't about unbridled profit. And that is actually really more of a 20th century concept that we have sort of imbued into corporations. And as a collective people have said, this is what we all want. Saying collective all we is, you know, a bit loosely, but you know, it definitely wasn't what the country was founded on. But like I said, not prepared to talk about that. That's a topic for another night.
Maybe that's a topic for the future.
Sure. We're slowly evolving from a technology gadget and interesting things to us to just you've tuned into the economic hour.
Well, but that is interesting to me. So I argue that that falls right into the wheelhouse of stuff we're supposed to talk about.
Fair enough. It's sociopolitics.
Right. So, hey, let's get back not on that topic at all. And let's talk about... I wanted to talk about the Android thing and reasons to root your Android device or not.
Okay, good. Because this actually came from a listener. So, hey, listeners out there, we do listen to you. And if you say you'd like to hear us talk about something, then by golly, we will give you our most uninformed opinion about
it. Oh, now.
All right. Why do you want to root your Android device, Jeff? Why do you want to?
I'm going to have... a kind of a different take on this. I guess one of the reasons you'd want to root your Android device is that you were silly and bought a Samsung device. Did I say that out loud? No. So, you know what I found, having owned Android for quite some time, rooting your device gives you the ability to install custom ROMs. And basically what a custom ROM gives you is the fit and finish of your phone, the menus, the drop downs, the little, you know, tap the home button three times and it does this type stuff. That is controlled at a ROM level. And by customizing or picking a custom ROM, you can basically kind of decide how you want your phone to look. If you want your phone to be everything in orange, by golly, if you have an Android and you root your device, you can make every single menu, every single drop down, every single volume rocker when it comes up on your screen orange, if that's what you want. And some people want that. When you buy an Android phone, you know, depending on whether or not you buy Samsung or LG or Motorola, each kind of has just a little bit of different take on what the menu should look like, what system dropdown should look like. And if you don't like the way that looks, if you don't like how it works, a custom ROM might be for you. It allows you to change the functionality of that in any way that you can possibly imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I was on Android, I installed a lot of different ROMs. And, you know, the thing is, for me, it wasn't so much about gaining access to the customizability as much as it was, you know, tinkering and doing something that, you know, there's really not an equivalent to in the world of iOS. Now, you can jailbreak an iPhone, but that still is a bit limited compared to putting a custom ROM on. Now, I will say this, you know, follow up to what you said. Yes, you can control the look and feel to the nth degree, but, you know, the other thing that people need to be aware of is you are really basically replacing the operating system. I mean, it is still Android, but you are now using your ROM builder's choice of kernel and kernel parameters and library volume or library versions. And that can be good or it can be really bad. And it gives you access to some really powerful tools. Like you can overclock your phone. Most people aren't aware of that. That is a thing that you can do. You can actually intentionally undervolt your phone and underclock it. So, you know, why would you might want to do that? Well, you can overclock to get better performance. Although at this point, I don't know that that's really a thing because the CPUs are so powerful compared to where they were 3 or 4 years ago. But you can underclock. Now, why would you want to do that? Well, you can extend your battery life. If the processor's not running as fast, you know, you're not consuming as many electrons. So, you know, you can do those things. Now, that gives you a lot more access to the hardware than the phone manufacturers ever intended. So, you know, you can really do some dumb things by going in and tweaking those settings, especially if you have no idea what you should be setting them to, or, you know, what they should be compared to where their defaults are. And, you know, so there is a little bit of shot in the dark when you're doing stuff like that. You know, one of the things that I think a lot of people would agree with is that a lot of the manufacturers' phones have a ton of crap loaded on them. You know, I've had AT&T Android phones that had a bunch of AT&T software. I've seen friends with Verizon phones that are full of Verizon software, and you can go in if the phone is rooted and you can debloat them. And you don't just hide those, but you can actually remove those applications. You never have to see them again, which is the way that it should be. You know, those are sort of some of the things that are, you know, you really can do that are really powerful. There's an app.
I wanted to mention, you know, we talked about ROMs and some of the advantages and disadvantages there. You know, go to XDA Developers Forum. If you do a search on XDA Developers, you can find your phone, you can read development threads, you can kind of get a feel for what some of the most popular ROMs are, and you'll get a pretty good idea of what those ROMs will give you and won't give you. And, you know, they know a lot more about it than Jacob and I, and, you know, do research, read a lot. And,
yes,
you know, that can maybe point you in some of the things that might be help. You know, Jacob talked about battery life and overclocking and underclocking. And quite honestly, some of the developers, when they get a phone that they love and they're developing for that phone, they tweak it to the point where it is so much more stable, has so much better battery life and better performance than what a Samsung comes up with for their ROM. Because, you know, Samsung is trying to get stuff done on a timeline. We all understand working at a big company, and they're just trying to get it to work well enough that they're not going to get a bajillion support issues, and they want to get it out. And I don't blame Samsung for that, but these people, this is what they do because they love doing it, not because they're trying to make any money. And they, I mean, there were some ROMs that I remember for my Galaxy S3, for instance, that just turned that phone into a beast, you know, improved battery life, improved stability, ran like it had never run before, fast, quick, animations that were beautiful. So, I mean, there are some really good things with ROMs. Now, different phones, different options, right? And, you know, like it or not, the more popular the phone, the more options there are. So, you know, if you have a Samsung, you're going to have more options than if you have an HTC One. That's just the plain facts. So just keep that in mind, but, you know, do go out there to the XDA. So let's talk about some other things non-ROM related, right? One of the things, Titanium Backup. A great application that is extremely powerful when you've rooted your phone. You can basically take backups of your entire application library and restore that, take it to a different phone. And when you're rooting and you're updating your ROMs or trying different ROMs, it's extremely valuable because you don't lose all that information. You can restore from your backups. So, you know, something that you should definitely look at.
Yeah. And, you know, another app that you can use on a non-rooted device, but you can also do a lot more if you're rooted, is an application called Tasker. And basically it is a conditional processing tool that, if certain criteria are met, you can have it do different things. And those criteria can be, as simple as if I get an incoming call from a certain number, then do a thing. It can be much more complex. I had Tasker rules so that whenever my phone connected to one of the cell towers around my office, it would go into work mode and it would mute the phone. It would turn off Bluetooth. It would turn off Wi-Fi to try and, you know, preserve battery life. And whenever it connected to one of the cell towers around my home, it would re-enable Wi-Fi and would make sure that Bluetooth was turned on. And, you know, so you can have it do things like that that are, you know, really powerful. And you do sort of get spoiled by those sort of features in the Android world when you don't even think about it. You know, I know when I get to work that, you know, from the time I park my car to the time I sit down at my desk, my phone's in work mode now. And I don't have to worry about it ringing or a silly sound playing or something like that. And it's turned off all the unnecessary services and vice versa. By the time I get in my car and I've left the parking lot, well, you know, Bluetooth has been re-enabled and it's connected to my car and it's re-enabled, you know, maybe my text sound, but I've got my ringer turned off, and you can really make it the way you want. It's a really powerful application.
Yeah, I mean, I had one that was so complex that it was like, okay, when my Bluetooth in my car turns off, unless I'm at work or at home, take a GPS snapshot of where I am, save that on my phone so that if I forget where my car is, I can hit the thing and it'll show where it was on the map.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it's extremely powerful. It's a great tool.
You can go and get, I believe that they're called recipes, and you can go find recipes and people share them, and, you know, you can tinker with them and make them your own. So those are, I mean, not exclusively have to be rooted to use, but you get access to some of the hardware in a way that you don't if you're rooted. Because again, you have access, you know, closer to the bare metal. Now, you know, one of the caveats of rooting, and, you know, as Jeff alluded to, go out and look on the XDA forums, because you need to really pay attention to what you're doing and what model your phone is. And it's sometimes not even enough to say, well, I have an HTC One. Because, well, now there are several generations of HTC One, but even within the current generation, you know, there's sometimes a different model for the different carriers. So an AT&T HTC One may be rooted and, you know, modified differently than a T-Mobile HTC One. And if you don't pay attention to what you're doing, you can really screw your phone up. And that's probably one of the biggest things that you need to be aware of. It is definitely not to the point. Like if you've ever jailbroken an iOS device, and some of the jailbreaks are literally as simple as downloading an application, connecting your phone to your computer with the lightning cable and click a button and your phone goes bloop and it reboots and it's jailbroken. It's a lot more complex with, some of the Android things because there are so many different versions and builds and manufacturers. So, you know, pay attention to what you're doing or you can brick your phone. Also, some phones are putting in flash counters that can't be reset if you root them. And if you root the phone and ever have to send it back in for a warranty claim, some of the manufacturers are denying those claims. Samsung has a new system called Knox, which allows personal and work spaces to coexist on the same phone. And it also happens to have if you install a custom recovery, so you may see references if you're looking in this space to Clockwork Mod or to Twerp, which are software that install at a very low level on your phone that let you boot the phone sort of into a special mode where you can install new packages, new ROMs, and things like that. And if you install those on a Samsung device that's running Knox, it has a so far unresettable counter, and you've just voided your warranty. So make sure that you know what you're doing and know why you're doing it before you go down that path, because if you develop problems with that phone while it still would be under warranty, Samsung's going to pack it right back up and send it back to you and say, sorry about your luck.
Yeah, read a lot, guys. I mean, proceed with caution and understand that make sure that you follow instructions that are out there to the T, that you're very careful, because if you make one wrong move, you have a phone that's no longer going to work.
I think that we are right at an hour, if not over an hour, Jeff. Where does the time go?
I don't know what to say.
Well, so that sounds like pretty much just a normal episode then.
Yeah, pretty much. There you go.
All right. Well, so why don't you tell me what you love right now?
Okay, so this is going to seem old and silly, and why am I talking about this at this time of the year? But I finally got around to seeing the movie Gravity, which I got for Christmas. And oh my gosh, what a great action movie. I mean, that was amazing. I should have seen it in the movie theaters. I didn't. Shame on me. But boy, that was quite enjoyable. I won't call it anything more than a really good action movie. A lot of people were attributing some really great things to the movie, and I'm not sure I quite agree with them. But for a pure, what I would consider nonstop action thriller, it was a good movie. Albeit some things that I just cringed at because, you know, I know that you can't really take off a space suit by yourself.
Right.
That's okay.
No, that movie definitely needed to be seen in 3D IMAX. And I did see it in 3D IMAX, and it was glorious eye candy. Some of the technical and physics being completely wrong, notwithstanding, like the fact that, the Hubble doesn't happen to be anywhere near where the International Space Station is from an orbital level. There were some problems there, but man, it was a pretty film. It was good. I liked it. especially in 3D. That begged for being larger than life.
Well, I did watch it in 3D, so.
Oh, yeah. You've got the 3D TV, but you didn't have the IMAX screen.
Well, I just sat really close.
Make my own IMAX, darn it. Oh, so, you know, what I love after opening and wrapping presents and opening presents and freeing toys from blister packs. And, you know, I firmly believe that whoever packages toys for kids has a sadistic twist who they hate people because those toys are so firmly ensconced. It boggles the mind. It truly is an evil, sinister mastermind that is packaging these. So I love two things, and they're both basically the same thing, and that is that they are a tool. I love my Kershaw one-ton folding knife, and it is it's a Chinese-made Kershaw. So, you know, right there, if you are an American-only Kershaw, I know, boo. If you're an American-only Kershaw, you're not going to like it. But here's the thing. It's like a $20 knife, and it is a phenomenal knife. I single-handedly used it to cut almost all of the wrapping paper for all of the gifts that I wrapped this year. And it was not an insubstantial number of gifts. And I didn't touch a pair of scissors once. It's just got a great blade on it. It's some of that Chinese steel, but it's decent steel. It's the 8CR13 MOV steel. It's a nice thin knife. It's a frame lock, and one piece of the frame is 410 stainless, and the other piece is a G10 resin plastic. So it's really thin in your pocket. Just got a great, great blade on it. I strop it a few times on my Spyderco sharp maker, which I'll probably put that on my What I Love one of these days because it is a sharpening system that is phenomenal. Man, it's like a razor. It cuts through anything you want like butter. I love it. And then the other thing I love for freeing toys from their eternal plastic hell prisons is my Victorinox Swiss Army Super Tinkerer pocket knife. And it's your standard Swiss Army knife, nothing crazy, but it's got an awesome pair of scissors on it. And it has a Phillips screwdriver on it, which is just phenomenal because it seems like everything has a battery compartment that's screwed shut and the Phillips screwdriver just fits it perfectly. The scissors get stuff out of blister packs so nicely. And I don't know what steel they use on the blades for the Victorinox, but they just take a sharpening so well.
410 stainless.
It's 410 stainless. they take an edge so well, and just to hit them a couple of times with the sharp maker, and you have got something that will pop hair right off of your arm and will slice blister packs from, you know, here to Sunday, and it is phenomenal. So I'm kind of a knife guy anyway, and I love my two little knives. I used them extensively the last few days, and they did not let me down one time.
Yeah, I'm a knife nerd. What can I say? I use my Benchmade, though. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't have a Benchmade. That would be on my wish list maybe for next year. One of these days I'll get one of those. But that's not in the cards yet. But I like my little Victorinox, and I've got a handful of Kershaws, and they've all done well by me.
You know I'm a Kershaw fan.
Yeah, they make a decent knife. All right, well, I think we're at just over an hour, actually maybe closer to an hour and 10. So I don't know if anybody's still listening, but I think we're in a good place to wrap things up. We've still got stuff to talk about, but that's why you're going to come in, tune in next week, right, everybody, of course.
That's absolutely.
All right, well, if you've got something that you want to hear us talk about or want to comment on something that we've already talked about, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at No Better Show or send an email to us, feedback@nobettershow.com. Or don't forget, you can call in our comment line, 317-643-1212. If you like the show, we'd really appreciate it if you'd tell your friends about us who might also like what we send out every week. And if you would please go on iTunes and rate and leave a review for us, that would just really go a long way towards helping us continue to build our audience and keep bringing you these completely mediocre podcasts that you have come to rely on. If you want to get in touch with me on Twitter, you can get me at NotTheRealJacob. Jeff, how can people get a hold of you?
At Jeff Chaney.
All right, that's all we've got for today, so you should know better than average, too. Have a great week, everybody. Were you going to say something?
No. Goodbye?
Oh, you know what we didn't tell people? Merry New Year. Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. New Year. Yes, because this is going to go up Tuesday the 29th.
Yeah.
So happy new year, everybody. And I promise we are
What better way to ring in the new year than to listen to a No Better Than Average podcast?
Yeah, that really should be asked more as a question, Jeff. What? A better way to ring in a new year than to listen to the No Better Than Average podcast? No, I don't think anybody wants to do that. But I promise, I hate year-end lists, so you are not going to get a year-end list, people. There will be none of that chicanery around here.
We have one year, new year, end of year lists. It's no lists.
We are just going to come right back like nothing happened next week. It will be 2015, and we will keep laying down the gold. So have a great time, everybody. Have a happy new year, and we will see you next week.
Can we lay down the bronze instead?
I would take, you know, semi-precious metal.
Tin? Can we lay down the tin?
Ooh, maybe tin ceilings.
Like, you know, that looks good in the right setting.
It does. I kind of binged on HGTV this afternoon. Have you seen the show Rehab Realities?
Yeah.
Oh, they had like four of them on back to back. And I just love watching these morons. It's... I'm not saying I could do any better, because I would probably cut my own foot off if I tried too hard with the Sawzall.
We'll see.
Yeah, the great
when you dig that hole,
the great sewer opening happens here in a few weeks. So yeah, we'll see. But
don't forget to videotape it.
There will be no photographic evidence whatsoever.